painting that it just shows the dukkha of khanda.
So not specifically upadana khanda, the dukkha of any khandas in this sense. So why do they, in some context, specifically say the upadana khandas?
When there is upadana, there is clinging right. to that object.
But regardless of whether there is clinging,
there can be upadana in one meaning. It's derived from dhamma, like upadana.
Right. So maybe it's referring in that meaning.
But what about dosa for khanda? It's conditioned by upadana, then, the dosa aversion.
If there's no clinging, can yeah. it condition dosa?
Dosa, yeah. So it has also upadana khanda as condition.
And then there's the quote, the one who sees the five khandas as objects of clinging and as murderers and etc., as enemy with drawn sword, is not worried by the khandas. So by understanding the khandas as being so bad, then one is not concerned about them. So this is what you were saying for the arahant. He's not concerned about them.
No matter how bad it is, it's just a rise and fall swing. Yeah.
So will it still be a drawn sword to him? I mean, wouldn't he?
Do we have to think about a sword?
It's just a comparison to help us. Similar to help us or remind us. But at the moment of insight, one is not bothered for that short moment. Is that right?
By what?
Why the khandas? The arising and falling away.
But isn't the fact that all khandas are dukkha?
In what sense?
In the ultimate sense.
Arising and falling away.
Arising and falling away. Doesn't that make it undesirable?
No attachment, less attachment, gradually.
So why should it be only with upadana, that it's like a drawn sword?
What about having upadana and not having upadana?
It's worse to have upadana.
Even there is no clinging, can anyone stop the arising and falling away of khanda?
No.
So in this sense, even though there's no clinging and no being concerned about them, they still are rising and are falling away and are just as bad, what one could say, or still an enemy, even if one's not bothered about the enemy at all, because of the second sense of being conditioned by karma. So can one say that they are still seen as dangerous, even though there's no upadana? Or one could say seen even more as being dangerous.
Otherwise, why parinibbana?
And sometimes it says in the text that the upadana khandas are the field of investigation of insight. So why does it say the upadana khandas here, not just the khandas?
As long as there is upadana.
So it's just stressing how insight has to be developed until there is no more upadana khandas, until arahatship. Or does this refer to the second meaning, until parinibbana? So even for the arahat who has no more upadana khanda in the sense of
no more upadana.
Okay, so this has to be the field of investigation by insight up to that level. Kunsukin, I'd like to ask you about a couple of these quotes on tanha that I've asked before, so I apologize for asking again, but it keeps coming back, and when I give my explanations I realize I'm not very clear about it. So these various texts we have on the two kinds of tanha, and this is the commentary note on the Bhikkhuni Sutta, mentions about the two kinds of craving, to be pursued and not to be pursued. And then the commentary note says, based on the present craving, tanha, the desire for becoming an arahat, he gives up previous craving that was the root cause of one's involvement in the cycle of rebirth. Now, it may be asked whether such present craving for arahatship is kusala or akusala. It is akusala. Should it be pursued, sevitabha? It should be pursued. Does it drag one into rebirth or not? It does not drag one into rebirth.
Who is that person who pursues?
The one with craving.
Yes, but who? What level?
Oh,
the one who wishes or want to be an arahata.
Yes.
Who is he?
Someone of developed wisdom already.
To what degree?
Is it the one close to arahatship? Mm-hmm. The one very close to being an arahatship, mm-hmm. So it's referring to the very slight, refined tanha mm-hmm. remaining, mm-hmm. and so it is a kusala
which is left until it's completely eradicated.
Why does it say it should be pursued?
Is it helpful? I don't think so.
No, not at all. It doesn't mean that it's the way to encourage anyone to have that, but whenever it arises, who can help?
But should be, maybe it's a translation sometimes from the Pali.
Should be pursued, to be followed. It just means it arises and it is followed when it arises. Is that how you understand? Oh, and it doesn't drag one into rebirth because becoming an arahat.
When we have problem, we check Pali first.
Right.
And see the translation with, to see whether it's correct or not.
I have seen it, the Pali. Oh, yeah. It has the, like Jonathan says, Abba ending, must.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be translated as must. Always.
It depends on the translation. We have to know that mm-hmm. first.
Yeah.
And after that, we have to consider the meaning,
whether
it is agreeable with other.
And when it says it doesn't drag one into rebirth, this means because of, on the attainment of a arahatship, so no more rebirth. Okay, that's fine.
Sorry, what is the source of this? The commentary.
The commentary to the sutta that people quote often.
And also, you know, the guide, the Neti Pagana, says to...
Yes, in the Neti, there's the quote about, I've got that here, about the two kinds of tanha, kusala and akusala. The kusala leads to samsara. The skillful tanha for abandoning leads to the diminishing of samsara. So is this the same kind of meaning? But in this context, why does it refer to the kusala and the akusala tanha?
It cannot be kusala.
No.
At all.
No.
But since it will lead to the understanding of it, otherwise it's there, not show up.
Right.
And Panya cannot see it.
Right. To be seen. About what they refer to or translate as the skillful tanha. I mean, in the Pali it says kusala tanha, but I think it's like a shorthand, a little bit like in the RAF simile, referring to the understanding of tanha. Eager desire piha, to enter peaceful sphere of the Aryans, having cheto vimuti due to the fading away of unskillful desire, raga viraga as object. Skillful tanha is chanda, eventually appeased. It says that what they call skillful kusala tanha is eager desire to enter, to realize nirvana due to the fading away. The skillful tanha is chanda.
See?
So here you mean it's kusala chanda.
It is chanda. Mm-hmm.
Kusala chanda.
Okay. If there's no commentary, you might mistake tanha for wholesome.
So when they call it kusala tanha, it means the tanha that is understood.
Mm-hmm.
And the commentary, Buddhaghosa commentary, sometimes gives the example by way of an analogy, like the cow who has tanha for cold water and drinks and gives satisfaction. So the tanha for these things, which is necessary to become enlightened. So people say, oh, there has to be attachment to arahatship in order to be enlightened, or there has to be an attachment to development. So how do you understand this simile of the cow? It's about how there has to be tanha for cold water.
A cow has attachment.
Right. But when it says in the commentary, oh, like a cow has tanha for the water, so there has to be tanha for arahatship.
Because a cow has attachment of many things. Mm. What about the grass, the hay, and the water?
Yeah.
See?
Is it because those things are necessities anyway, that the cow has attachment to them,
as
but they are necessities?
A cow is a cow, there must be attachment.
Right, I see.
The person who's not an arahata yet must have attachment. For what? Water or grass or hay or what?
Right. Yeah.
It seems that it's saying must be, it's like it must have this attachment.
Who doesn't have attachment?
No, for reaching that.
Who doesn't have? And if it's there, should it be known? Otherwise, how can Panya eradicate it when it does not show up at all?
But giving the example of the cow,
say, it doesn't matter.
Cow or spider. Does it have to be cow or is a cow?
Yes, but giving the example of a cow clearly shows lopa, tanha, and that seems to imply that that is the way.
If the commentator didn't talk about cow, could he talk about other animal?
Why animal at all? Mm-hmm. Because we know clearly that animals have only lopa.
Dog.
It's not how we can convince anyone, you know.
Then it's not a matter of trying to convince, but it's a matter of understanding the reality which is there. Who has such craving, ordinary, worldly, or anagami, or who?
Yes, anagami will have the tanha, that's natural, and it will not lead to rebirth. But we're giving the explanation and trying to convince people who are convinced that you need tanha.
No need, because it's there. It has to arise, no matter you need it or not.
People tend to think that you have to reduce lopa in, but that's only with because there's a concept of self, that we think that we have to reduce something, and that's not what it's about. It's about understanding.
I think specifically the sticking point is that Ajahn has said in the past that there must be detachment from the very beginning. So we mention this. And yet there are these suttas that say that tanha is inevitable. And we know that tanha is inevitable, but I think the question being asked is, people quote this back to us and say, you don't have to have detachment from the beginning, because here it says a certain kind of tanha is positive, is going to help the development of the path.
You mean today there is no tanha?
Today there is tanha.
I think Ajahn always talked about attachment and tanha all the time. But she's ultimately, yes, there's none. But Ajahn's always talking about that.
I'm not saying she's not talking about attachment. Mm. I'm saying that the point of whether there has to be detachment from the beginning.
Yes, from the very beginning.
Yes.
And this is very useful.
I understand that. I'm in agreement. But I think the question being asked is, other people say there doesn't have to be detachment from the beginning because this sutta shows that there has to be tanha.
So no need to study, no need to read, because what we read will lead to have less and less tanha.
This, I appreciated so much of Ajahn's teaching about the detachment and always stressing this. Also yesterday, during all the talks, that we have to learn to detach from the self. This reminder is so helpful. And we don't hear it from others.
Detachment from the beginning.
From the beginning,
yeah.
What do you mean by that?
I understand that to mean that the path cannot be developed unless there are moments of detachment. That if there is any moment of awareness, it is a moment with detachment. And awareness is what is to be developed, only awareness. So that involves detachment. It's no good saying one starts with attachment, it doesn't matter, you practice regardless of whether there's attachment or not. And that somehow transmutes into something without attachment later on. No.
And this is the meaning of what Ajahn stresses all the time, that everything is Dhamma. Mm. To help us to have more detachment. Mm.
The detachment from the beginning, Ajahn.
Yes, detachment from ignorance, from wrong view, even theoretical. When there is no hearing at all about Dhamma, can there be any detachment?
No.
Not at all. So we can see that the whole teaching of Buddha is the way to become detached from ignorance and wrong view and other akusala.
But are we talking about when panya arises and knows the moment as being detachment?
It's the panya which performs the function of detachment. Mm.
So
nobody.
There's attachment other than that. There's always, we've got attachment until there's an understanding.
Attachment is tanha,
right.
And detachment is panya.
In terms of what is the development of the path,
right.
It is only with detachment.
Right.
Yeah, even at the beginning, mm-hmm. It's only with detachment. Mm-hmm. You cannot say, we cannot have detachment yet because panya hasn't been developed. It'll come later. Just practice,
mm-hmm.
And you'll find that detachment will come in due course. That is not our understanding of the teachings.
But ultimately, there has to be detachment for there to be progress.
What is the wrong path and what is the right path?
Mm.
See?
Konsuchin, you mentioned, well, I said, oh, so this tanha is chanda, and you said, okay, we need the commentary definition. But in another sutta, in a Samyutta sutta, it has a similar kind of phrasing, for the sake of abandoning chanda, life of excellence is lived, and that chanda is appeased, patipassada, on arahatship. And here the commentator says that this chanda to be abandoned is tanha, and the appropriate chanda is satisfied at arahatship. So in this case, it's definitely referring to akusala.
Yeah, chanda can arise with either kusala
or akusala. So sometimes in these kinds of contexts about the two kinds of tanha, and they say tanha is chanda, but sometimes it's referring to kusala chanda.
Great understanding has to follow the teachings.
Right. And so here, objects within samsara abandoned by the development of the appropriate tanha, appeased as an arahatship. So when it's very tricky, the wording, one has to be very careful. So the chanta here can be akusala and the other one kusala, yes.
I want to ask something about Ajahn, something. You say a sort of radio, you listen to many kinds of teachings, even wrong teachings or other religions, and you still find you can develop your own understanding while listening to that. Maybe we can learn something from what you do here.
Wise or right consideration. Attention,
yeah,
to what is heard.
Like the books we had here from the Burmese monk who was number one in Pali and translated the wrong way because he didn't have the right consideration. And it's still useful to read those books.
With understanding.
With understanding. And while listening to the radio, you said you turn on anything, and I found it a good example. So any moment there can be the development of right understanding. I was just wondering whether we can learn something from what you do.
When Ajahn was giving talks at Wamahata in the old days on Sundays, I used to go along beforehand and listen to Tan Kitty or Dokfi.
Okay. Yeah, Tan Kitty, yeah.
Yeah, you can listen to someone talking like that and can be auditioned for reflecting in the right way.
Yeah.
Yes. So your question is about Hunsuchin's way of listening or attending, or
that you can get even out of that, something good out of that, because we are subject to hear lots of things.
Yeah.
But isn't it coming back to the point of it being the wise reflecting and considering that's important? So hearing Dharma or appreciating the reminders as being the most important thing, regardless of the activity.
We don't have to change anything. We don't have to change our lifestyle, which I found so very useful from the beginning, right from the beginning. I didn't want any other way, like sitting and concentrating. I was not interested.
I know it's not a very good topic, but I had a discussion with someone about suicide, and we discussed the example of Sumana, Anathapindika's daughter, who starved to death or wasted away, even though she was a Sakadagami. And the person said, well, isn't this like someone going on a hunger strike or deliberately starving themselves to death, what's the difference? Because we'd already mentioned that a sotapanna could never take their life, and about the Vinaya rules. And
sotapanna or arahata?